Okay, so it's a big welcome to All About Symbian Insight number 34. Again, we've got two people. This time it's myself, Steve Litchfield, and...
Rafe Blanford.
Okay, so there's quite a bit to cover this week. Last week there was perhaps a tiny bit waffly, if I can use that word without offending Rafe. We've got some hard, concrete devices. But before we get into that, just a bit of news. First up, as you'll have seen on the site, Google Maps is now at version 2.2. This is a pretty terrific going from them, apart from the fact that they seem to be steering clear of actual turn-by-turn real-time navigation. I'm going to ask Rafe about that in a moment, but just briefly, the improvements for 2.2, there's now public transport timetables for cities worldwide, although my tests in London weren't terribly impressive yesterday. I'm sure they'll improve those databases as they go on. There are now faster search results, apparently. There are star ratings for businesses, which is jolly useful, and other user-generated content, so people can put in content on the desktop version of Google Maps, and you'll be able to search and find matches and look at what they put in on the mobile client. So well worth it. It's all free, as usual. One comment on the version numbering, it's 2.2. When you actually install it, it says 2.02. That's just the way version numbering under Symbian OS works, and you'll have to get used to it, I'm afraid. So 2.1 is 2.01, 2.2 is 2.02, and so on. Rafe, what's the reason why Google Maps seems to be steering clear of actual real-time navigation?
Well, I don't know 100%, of course, but I suspect the reason for this is to do with licensing issues on the map. Both Navtec, which is of course now part of Nokia, and Teleatlas, which are the two data suppliers for Google, have different licensing costs for maps, and you can license it basically for, if you like, the mapping data, but it costs extra to have the directions, and it costs even more to have turn-by-turn directions with sort of voice guidance. And basically there's, you know, a number of rules when you license this data. So I suspect while Google can subsidize the cost of those licenses via the ads that appear via sponsored listings in Google Mobile, and obviously on the main version of Google Maps as well, and they can subsidize the cost of the license for the first two, I suspect the extra one is that extra little bit of cost which they can't subsidize, and therefore, because they're giving it away for free, that's probably why we don't have turn-by-turn directions on the Google Maps mobile.
Okay, and Rafe's just got a text message, so while he reads that, I'll carry on. Just you can get Google Maps 2.2 by going to google.com/GMM on your S60 or indeed your UIQ or indeed your Series 40 phone. So that's pretty cool. Next up, Skyfire, which is a new proxy-based, almost image-based in a way, browser, which somehow constructs a virtual image of a Mozilla / Firefox session on a remote server and then streams it down to you in compressed format. Rafe, do you want to just address the functionality and then we'll move on to other issues concerning it?
Yeah, I mean, It essentially what it does, it gives you a very PC-like experience on your phone. You know, we've seen proxy browsers like Opera Mini, and they basically squish down the page with compression and various tricks do the same thing, but it tends to be optimized for viewing sort of on a mobile phone in a single column, although, of course, there are other modes in Opera Mini. It's Java-based. Skyfire is actually a native Symbian version, and whereas it's sort of Opera Mini is a transcoder, Skyfire has an actual instance of Firefox. It's not really Firefox, but it's the same technology running on a server, which allows you to basically have this version of the PC browser doing the browsing for your phone, and as a result of that you can access a lot more of the web technologies, like for example the full version of Flash 9, but also Java, which means you can see pretty much any web page as you'd see it on the desktop. Of course, there's still limitations with screen size and things. Skyfire is in very early beta, and there are quite a few rough edges, not least around kind of the user interface. But I think this sort of thing shows a lot of potential, given the problems that you do tend to have on mobile browsers, particularly around some of the Ajax and the sort of Web 2.0 sites, you know, things like Gmail or Google Reader, or a lot of the, you know, the online image things. And while, you know, there are mobile sites for most of these things, sometimes they don't quite have the same level of functionality. So when you've got a decent size screen on a mobile device, you know, there is an argument that the PC site might be worth having. And I think this is where Skyfire fits in. As I say, it's early days and it's not for everyone, but I think it shows potential.
Yeah, the issue of scalability came up in one of the comments, which is quite true. But it's not a question of multiplying an everyday desktop Firefox session by, you know, a million people using it at once, then thinking somebody's got to have a stonking great server farm to handle it. Because, as you say, the underlying technology is the same as in Firefox, and I presume a browser session might occupy only a couple of megabytes on a server somewhere to handle what you're doing on Skyfire on mobile. Carry on, Rafe.
I was going to say, yeah, I imagine you're right. You know, they'll be using the Gecko rendering engine, which is the bit inside Firefox that displays web pages. But of course, you know, they've got proprietary technology, which not surprisingly they're not being very specific about because there's all sorts of patents pending on it. But yeah, I mean, yes, it is going to be pretty resource intensive and going to need some pretty meaty servers. But relatively speaking, that kind of hardware is coming down in cost, and it's certainly not a question of multiplying multiple PCs together. And especially when you bear in mind that not everyone's online at the same time, and you know, for 99% of the time your browser's actually idle looking at a single page, and so, you know, in one instance you could imagine that 100 people could fit on a single instance of the browser, but it's obviously, I imagine, a lot more complicated than that. While I do think there are scalability issues, I wouldn't be too concerned about them, because I imagine Skyfire have them well in hand.
Okay. There's also the issue of privacy, but I'm going to leave that for another podcast, because I think that's something we could probably go into in great detail in terms of software in general and services in general. Third bit of news for this week, the Missing Sync, which is a famous piece of software from the Mac world for connecting PDAs, mobile phones, to Apple Macs. They've now got a version for Symbian in beta test for S60, so you should be able to do all the wireless syncing and also sync a wider range of content from your smartphone. I'm going to be looking at this over the next 2 or 3 weeks. I've got a MacBook very kindly donated for 3 weeks, a 3-week trial by Apple PR, so thanks to them. And I'm going to be looking at all aspects of connectivity, syncing data, syncing images, transferring media from the point of view of a complete Apple Mac newbie. I've only ever used a Mac for a couple of hours here and there from borrowed machines and playing on other people's. So this is a real new user's approach to Mac and how it relates to phones and smartphones. So I'll be featuring that on the site, probably one feature a week. So watch this space. Devices. This is the main meat of this show. New in AIS Towers, aka Rafe's house. The Samsung i560, I'll just mention this very briefly, it's not that special. It's if you remember the i550 that we reviewed on the site a few months ago, which is basically a thin candy bar, this is effectively a slider version of the same phone. Moreover, it's the slider version of the phone without the Wi-Fi, which is a bit disappointing from my point of view. But it's sleek, it's very well built, and it's certainly worth a look. And we'll probably do a review for completeness at some point in the near future. Also in AS Towers, the Samsung G810. Rafe?
Yes, this is, I think, the more interesting of the Samsung devices. Effectively, you can think about it as Samsung's version of the N95. It has a 5-megapixel camera, but it also has a couple of extras on the camera, which sort of make it more like an N82 in actual specs, although, as I say, the form factor's a slider in line with the N95, because it's got a xenon flash, which, you know, should give you much better results in low-light conditions, and it's also got a 3x optical zoom, which is the first time we've seen that since the N93, I believe, Steve.
Now, I was gutted that you got to walk away with it at your place rather than me taking it back for testing. But if you run into problems, Rafe, I'm happy to test that one for you.
Yeah, well, I'm sure I'll be sending it over to Steve shortly. It's also got the GPS stuff and, as you'd expect, the various other bits and pieces. And again, we'll be reviewing that in due course. And I have to say thank you to Samsung for loaning us both of those devices for review.
Yeah, more on Samsung, including the big one, in a minute. But first of all, also new in this week for review. This is the Nokia 6650, which is a number most people won't have heard of. It's that rare beast, an S60 third edition, and it's feature pack 2 even, clamshell, along the lines of the very ill-fated N76, but much, much, much better done. It's gorgeously constructed. I'll just fiddle with the microphone. There we are. So it's a metal finished on front and back, a Razer-style keyboard inside that works really well. The screen's a little disappointing. The outer one's a clock-in standby mode and also offers music controls and basic calendar and time functions, which is fine. On the inside, it's only a 2.2-inch screen, and it looks comparatively tiny compared to things like my N95 8GB. And I'm a bit disappointed. The whole point of a clamshell phone, as I understand it, is you've got far more surface area to do stuff, and there's plenty of a black plastic that's unused on the inside of the 6650, so I would have expected at least a 2.4, maybe even a 2.6-inch screen. But that aside, there are very few negatives. It's gorgeously made. The hinge feels very solid. It's got GPS. There's only a 2-megapixel camera, but there is flash. There's no Wi-Fi, but on this sort of style of phone and the positioning of this phone. It's a T-Mobile exclusive, I think, at the moment. You wouldn't necessarily expect Wi-Fi of the average consumer, but it's 3.5G, of course. There'll be a review along on the site in about a week and a half's time, but I think I'm going to be saying some quite nice things about this. Rafe, any opinions on the 6650?
Well, I think it's just worth underlining for people that don't know, as you say, this is a T-Mobile exclusive, which means you won't be able to get hold of it on other operators. And actually, to my mind, that's something of a shame, because I think this is quite a nice, you know, mid-tier device. For those of you that like the 6290, which was the last S60 clamshell and one of the first running S60 Feature Pack 1, incidentally, it's basically the successor to that, I would say, in terms of positioning and shape. But it's a shame it's not going to be more widely available, because I think it's rather a nice handset myself.
Yeah, I sometimes when I pick up a handset, I think, no, this isn't for me. Sometimes I pick it up and I think, yes, I'd like to own this, I'd like to use it. Now, in the case of the 6650, I know I'm not going to use it because there's no Wi-Fi and the camera's relatively lowly. But if I would take myself back a couple of years in a time machine, or just with me in a different mood, I'd really like to own this and carry it around and use it. It just feels great in the hand. It's beautifully made. So expect some nice things to be said from me on that, all about Symbian in the near future. Before we get to the big one, we're getting there. A hands-on yesterday, Rafe and I visited Samsung's headquarters, or one of their headquarters, under invitation, very, very kind of them, and we got hands-on with two devices. The first one is the L870. Rafe, take this one away.
That's right. This is the Samsung device that was launched at the S60 Summit in Barcelona on May the 28th. It's the first time I've actually seen it in person. I think the best way to describe this is it's kind of a slim slider with a rather nice metallic finish, and I think it would probably be best classed as a business phone. And, you know, I think you might draw a parallel to something like the E65 or even the E66, although maybe it's, you know, slightly more down from there. But as I say, the build quality and the materials on this thing, it's, you know, in some senses it did remind me of the 6650 that we've just been talking about. Are really nice. And, you know, especially when I look back at some of the earlier Samsung devices like the i450, you know, it really struck me how much more design had gone into this. And, you know, that was a very welcome thing. In terms of sort of the specification, you know, again, it's, you know, nothing particularly special. It's got a 3-megapixel camera. I did a few tests on this yesterday, and actually the pictures were turning out pretty well. It is an autofocus camera, so, you know, the results were pretty decent, you know, for this kind of specification. Maybe not up to the level of something like the N78 with its Carl Zeiss optics, but certainly superior to the recent E-series devices that have launched from Nokia. It's also interesting because it's running S60 third edition Feature Pack 2, so this is actually the first Samsung device to do this, and it's, you know, they've done a good job implementing it. The software seemed very stable. They'd also included a number of interesting extras in terms of software. You know, they'd licensed some various bits of software, including stuff like a video editor. And this particular phone is actually going to have the full version of QuickOffice, I think version 4.1 on it. That's both the reading mode and the editing mode, which, you know, probably reflects the fact it's aimed at business users. And in terms of size, it's, you know, fits in the hand very comfortably. It's pretty small and pretty thin. We're going to have some pictures up of this and, you know, an initial preview, because we were looking at a pre-release device in due course. But yes, you know, this one definitely caught my eye as something that was, you know, a little bit different than what I was used to seeing from Samsung. And I was just impressed by the feel of it in my hand. And, you know, I think it'll get overshadowed by the device we're going to talk about in a little bit. But that, you know, shouldn't take anything away from it, because, you know, I think they've done a really good job with it. And, you know, certainly competes with some of Nokia's similar offerings in that same kind of market position. And I know you had a quick play with it, Steve. What did you think?
I agree with all of that, apart from the fact that I hated the theme. I know it's a minor thing, but the default theme on the prototype device was one of these brushed metal thing where everything's grey, a bit like the Nokia E71's default theme. It just seems horrible, horribly bland. If Samsung are listening, spice it up and make it just a tiny bit more interesting, please. The other device we were looking at yesterday had a jolly gorgeous theme, but that wasn't the thing I was looking at. I was more interested in looking at the 8-megapixel camera with dual LED flash, the image stabilization, the quarter VGA video capture at 120 frames a second, the integrated GPS, the accelerometer, the optical touchpad, the 16 gigabyte of internal flash memory, micro SD card slot, 3.5G, Wi-Fi, UPnP, high-speed USB, 3.5mm audio jack, DivX and WMV video support, I could just go on. It's also S63rd edition, feature pack 2. We are, of course, talking about the Samsung Innovate, the i8510. And I have to admit, I'm in love. I walked into Samsung's HQ yesterday with the Nokia N95 8GB, which I still maintain is the best phone in the entire world. And at the end of the day, I wanted to put it to one side and take home Samsung's flagship. The Innovate is probably a month or so away from full production and availability, and we have been promised a very early production unit, which is great for a proper review. But I was absolutely blown away. The camera is stonkingly good. By the time you listen to this, there should be something up on the site with some sample images, so do check those out. We had slightly limited accessibility because we weren't allowed to go outside for obvious reasons. I think I might have done a runner off to the train station, but so we weren't allowed outside, so the lighting wasn't absolutely perfect, but it's a very, very good camera. It feels great in the hand, so unlike the N95 8GB, which is, even I admit, is a bit chunky and clunky, this just felt beautiful in every dimension. It was a very good build quality. No problems with the slider, and it's got every specification known to man. Just as with the L870, there's the full software pack again with the Google Maps, all their apps now built into the firmware, with the dictionary, Route 66 now rebadged as Samsung Mobile Navigator, the native S60 versions of FIFA and Asphalt. Samsung have really put a lot of effort into giving it a better software bundle so that new users get a fighting chance of playing with some extra software. It's from where Samsung were 2 years ago at the smartphone show when we met them in London at sort of autumn 2006, when they had some plasticky prototypes that were distinctly unimpressive. So today, or yesterday in fact, when we were playing with the Samsung Innovate, which is essentially the highest spec phone in the entire world, bar none. And it was enormously impressive. I think Samsung have come a long way. And most importantly, they have got huge momentum. The Samsung staff we were talking to were just blown away themselves by how rapid development has been and is carrying on. And they're just being caught up in this huge rush of development and design. And as the Samsung Innovate's name suggests, there is some genuine innovation going on here. The camera in particular has, well, I'll just read you the list of specs. It says image stabilizer, auto panorama shot, smile shot, blink shot, wide dynamic range, and face detection. I mean, some of these are slight gimmicks, I have to admit, and not all of them work at the full resolution, so there's a few caveats there. The Innovate will take a long, long time to review properly. I mean, rather than just reviewing a device based on a week's usage, which is what we normally do, I think I'd actually have to use this one. Hey, Samsung, send me one. I have to use this one for a good 2 or 3 weeks intensively, and then to find out all the good and bad points. There are bound to be a few gotchas, there are bound to be, but I was blown away yesterday. Rafe, what were your opinions on the Innovate?
Yes, Steve, I was similarly impressed. You know, maybe on the downside, some of the materials felt a bit plasticky, but again, you know, they aren't necessarily the final ones we were looking at. But, you know, just to emphasise what you said about the size, you know, especially compared to the N96, which I'm sure the Innovate is going to be put up against, it's quite considerably smaller, and I don't think that particular factor should be underestimated. I also like the fact that a lot of thought had gone into the design of the camera software. You know, basically, the very key functions were accessible from the D-pad, you know, things like switching it into macro mode, switching the flash on and off, and, you know, timer mode as well. But if you wanted to get into more detail, there was a nicely designed equivalent of the options menu, but I thought it had been laid out quite impressively, and actually it bears more similarity to some of Samsung's standalone digital cameras than it does to, you know, the more traditional smartphone or phone camera applications. And when you're talking about a camera like this, that's obviously a good thing. You know, inevitably with the Innovate, people talk about the 8 megapixel being unnecessary, and of course that, to an extent, that's true. You know, if you use it in 3 megapixel mode, you know, you're probably going to get pretty decent results as well, but certainly from the results I saw, bearing in mind that, you know, we were limited in the testing, the actual sensor inside, it seemed to be extremely good. You know, it had a nice big lens for capturing a decent amount of light, and the initial results looked very promising indeed. There was some nice stuff on the video, including the ability to be able to do an initial focus, which gives better video results overall. And as Steve said, the software bundle was impressive. So, you know, I came away very impressed. You know, I think, again, have to wait and see a little bit on this one, but certainly I think the difference is with this particular Samsung device is that Samsung is right on the cutting edge and arguably has, you know, the most innovative device around. Okay, it's not a leap like the N95 was, but rather than playing catch up, you know, I might compare it to the G810, which was very much catching up with some of the things Nokia had done before, whereas I feel the Innovate actually takes it to a new level. Especially bearing in mind that this is going to have you know, the extra megapixels on the camera, but also some of the extra bits of software we haven't seen before from Samsung. And you know, there's a lot of customized things in there. We haven't got time to go through them all. But yes, I was, you know, impressed by this device. And you know, it, for me, it's pretty staggering when you get Steve saying, yeah, this is the device that I think is going to replace my N95, because Steve has loved his N95 dearly, just as I have. And I can tell you it takes quite something to knock the spots off the N95, as owners of that device will know. Now, I'm sure the ultimate smartphone tag is going to be debated endlessly in the next few months, but I think that is a measure of just how impressive this device is. And yeah, now I came away really impressed by it.
Yeah, the one point about the 8 megapixels, yes, you do not need them for shooting 6x4 snaps. You don't even need an 8 megapixels for shooting good 7x5 printouts. The only point of going up in the megapixels like that is so that you can take a photograph of a scene or whatever, and you can crop out, say, the quarter that's most interesting, the person you want, and you'll still get a really high resolution image that you can print off as if that was the whole scene rather than just part of the scene. And of course, this only works, as Rafe said, if the optics are any good. From what we saw, the optics were pretty good, but it will need us to test it outdoors, of course. So that's coming up. You'll see a hands-on preview on the site more or less the time you hear this podcast, so do check that out. Also, a video hands-on preview. And sometime in 2 or 3 weeks' time, maybe a month's time, we'll have the genuine device for a long-term review. And boy, will we test this thing. Rafe and I will both have units, so you'll get a two-headed opinions from both of us. We'll also have the N96 in by then, so I'm really looking forward to putting those two devices head-to-head, A versus B. And I'm sure that will provoke debate. Before we go, just a mention of the Sony Ericsson G-Series devices, UAQ3-based. People have been asking about these. They are coming in for review as soon as the PR, I won't mention pull their finger out, but as soon as PR get back to us, and we nudged them a few times, the G-Series are arriving and they will be reviewed and all that soon. But we haven't forgotten them. These are some of the last UIQ3 devices that will be put into production. So that's it for All About Symbian Insight 34. It's thanks to Rafe.
Thank you, Steve.
Yep, and we'll see you next week. Bye.